online. Let me please share the presentation. Thank you. So the FA Post Office, we are presenting the annual results for the year ended 31 March 2020. Honourable Chair and members, noting that Post Office, we are presenting these results a year later. We know that from what we've seen globally and locally, the way we work and also the way we live has significantly changed. I'll get into the presentation. On the highlights of the Post Office for the year ended 2020, we found that our delivery standard has improved by 12.8% to 89.25%. For the year under review, 535 million items have already been delivered. One of the important things that we've done within the Post Office is to look at our delivery matrix that we implemented so that we can increase our career competitiveness. One of the important things that we have to do is to ensure that we implement our various features in branches in terms of security, so we can improve that during the year. What we found really pleasing is that overall we found that there was a 45% reduction in the various incidents of crime that we experienced in the Post Office. It actually went down from 2,876 to 2,682 incidents of crime. What we're pleased to say is that we managed to also deliver the USO through the 529 located post offices, various parts of the country, that mainly caters for the rural and the underserviced areas. The SA Post Office also has to be a responsible citizen. Therefore, we have to ensure that we can also make good contributions in terms of energy reduction. We've actually achieved 17% there. Also, when it comes to waste paper, we managed to have 54 tons of paper recycled. Technology in this day and age is quite important also for the Post Office. In the previous financial year, we actually began upgrading our IT network. We managed to achieve 81% in terms of this target, where we saw 1,083 post offices move online onto our new network with fiber, from the original 1,329 that we identified. When it comes to the ATM and the various transactions done on POS, we managed to achieve 99% in terms of standard. Thank you. For the Post Office, our entire environment, when you look at the labor, actually remained very stable during the year. On the headcount, we managed to have a reduction of 1,871 employees, actually moving down to 16,488 employees. This was actually largely achieved through the VSPs that we implemented during the year, which saw 730 employees that actually take these applications. For the Post Office, the year under review, we still had a lot of executive vacancies that were actually moving into the recruitment phase. And one of the important things that we've done under the year of review is we ensured that we appoint 6 RGMs in the different regions of the Post Office to ensure that we create the greater capacity in terms of leadership. On the side of government projects, the Post Office, you know that we actually paid a social grant. Over 8 million people have been paid on a monthly basis for the grants. We also did some work when it comes to 2.6 million school books to be delivered to various schools in the Limpopo and Northern Cape. Also, we had to new addresses that to be rolled out. It's 137,000 of them. The DGT is also an important project for government, where we actually ensure that 1.1 million people have already been registered through the set-top box, and we also issued 549,000 of the set-top boxes that have been installed in homes of citizens. When it comes to the strategy, for the Post Office for the year 2020, we had a vision. We did an exchange of channel as trusted to ensure service delivery. Our country that is also respected for our relevance, reliability, reach, and resilience. The mission is to ensure that we are reliable and have relevant government service delivery channel so that there's access to government services and also enabling secure digital and physical transactions for citizens of the country. The values are very important for the post office. On, right on top, you see there is we have a passion for our customers and excellent customer services so that we know that we are improving the service that we provide to our customers. The objective that we have for our strategy, we've identified six of them for the financial year. One is to ensure efficient systems and processes. Two is to ensure that assets and infrastructure is optimized. We also have to look at revenue and funding that we have to diversify. We also have to look at the future to see the different types of products and services that we have for our customers. And most important for us is to look at our various customers and communities and see how we put them first. But doing all of that, we have to maintain a culture of excellence so that we can improve what we do. When you look at our performance for the financial year, the post office, we had 17 key performance indicators and objectives that we targeted. Unfortunately, we only achieved six of them that gave us 100% of our end target. That gave us a very low performance of 35%. We've identified 11 of them that we did not achieve, but within that 11, we achieved seven of these KPIs above 80% of the planned targets, despite we actually missing the 100% target that was planned for the year. A little bit on each of these performance indicators. The major delivery standard we've spoken about, we've just come a little below than the cost of regulator standard of 92%. We achieved 89.25% on the ATM uptime, linked to the IT there. We actually came in at 99%. Assets, we did have a problem here when it comes to assets and infrastructure optimization. We plan to do investment in our properties and refurbishments, but unfortunately we didn't have the actual funding to get it done. So we've not achieved that KPI, but we did achieve on ensuring service delivery through the USO. When we look at our revenue that we planned for the last financial year, the annual revenue, we came in at 8% below the planned target for the year. What we've seen is that mail revenue still remains the main contributor, although it is on a steady decline in terms of normal volumes, as you see. And then also we're finding there's various mail substitutions that people are using to actually communicate chapter and page. There's also, we find that there's a monthly mismatch between the revenues generated and the operating expenditure that we need to meet. And this has also put tremendous pressure in terms of our financial obligations to the organization. What we've seen is that we've seen our overall revenues further shrink post the environment of COVID. That is also greatly affecting the business. We do receive an amount of 2.9 billion rand. The 18-19 financial year, which was used by the post office to actually pay off the loans and also to ensure that we pay critical suppliers that we have money to. The important for post office is to look at the future and ensure that we have various digital apps and also various platforms towards getting to our vision 2030. And looking at that, we plan to do the ePay and also the omni-channel platforms. We unfortunately were unable to fully go through the normal process of SEM. It is implemented during the previous financial year. We had to have these targets rolled over into the new financial year to ensure we proceed that to ensure we have these services. When it comes to looking at various complaints that we received from customers, we've actually set a target there of having all of them, 100% of these resolved within 14 days in line with the CASA standard. We unfortunately were unable to achieve the 100, but we came in at 84% resolution there. And we also undertook a survey with customers to see in terms of our satisfaction levels to customers. We had an overall result there, which was very low of 58%. We're looking at how we can improve that so that we can address some of the concerns that are raised by customers. On the next objective, on the headcount, post office, we've reduced in the year under review by 1,871 employees. We also undertook an employee satisfaction survey during the year. Unfortunately, we had a very low result there, 42%. That also is in alignment with our overall environment that we find our employees operating. We're also trying to address some of these issues with labor so that we can improve the overall, what you call low morale within employees so that they can service our customers better. When it comes to the audit, which was something that was measured there, we, although at the beginning of the year, we thought that we would get an unqualified audit opinion. We actually are not pleased that we've achieved actual disclaimer of opinion in terms of our audit finding. We've already begun work in that area there to look at how we can improve the audit outcome for this financial year ended 31 March 2021. Honourable Chair, I'll hand over to our acting CFO, Mr. Lenny Govender, who will do the finance slide. Thank you. Lenny?
Thank you, Gerald. Good evening, Honourable Chairperson, Portfolio Committee members, Honourable Minister, both members and colleagues present. In terms of the revenue for SAPO for the year ending 31st March 2020, revenue of 4.1 billion was received in comparison to 5.3 billion for the previous financial year. In the previous financial year of 2019, we had revenue of 1.8 billion rand, which included Postbank. As from the 1st April 2019, Postbank is required to prepare separate financial statements and hence the financials have not been consolidated in 2020. If you look at the postal service, the revenue was 2.8 billion, which increased marginally by 0.2%. Our financial services revenue of 1.2 billion rand increased by 606 million due to the full year revenue we received for the SASA transactions of 735 million. In comparison to 108 million rand received in the previous financial year. Our operating cost of 6.5 billion reduced by 5% to 6.8 billion rand, and our staff cost increased by 3.6% to 3.9 billion. The staff costs contribute 60% of SAPO's operating costs and is one of our major cost drivers. The loss for the year increased by 669 million rand to 1.8 billion rand, and when you compare to the prior year, the loss was 1.1 billion. If you look at the 2019 financial year, we had Postbank profits consolidated. So if you normalize the loss for 2019, the loss excluding Postbank was 1.6 billion rand, which increased by 200 million if you compare from a normalized base. Next slide, please, Gerald. Slide 4 is just the detailed income statement where we cover the selling points, where revenue was 4.1 billion rand. We have staff costs of 3.9 billion rand and operating loss of 1.6 billion rand, resulting in a loss for the year of 1.8 billion rand. Next slide, please. Thank you, Jill. Next slide. So in terms of our statement of financial position or the balance sheet, the total assets was 11 billion rand. We got the non-current assets of 4 billion rand, the investment in Postbank of 3.5 billion rand and current assets of 3.5 billion with a total assets of 11 billion rand. So in 2019, we had the Postbank financials consolidated in the 2019 numbers. But in 2020, Postbank is required to prepare separate financials and not been consolidated. If you look at the share capital was 8.1 billion rand and the accumulated loss increased to 6.1 billion rand. With non-current liabilities of 2.4 billion rand and total equity and liabilities of 11 billion rand. Next slide, please. In terms of cash flow, as the revenue continues to be lower than the expenditures, we resulted in the operation utilizing cash in the prior year of 1 billion rand and 716 million rand in the 2020 financial year. We have in the prior year, as Joe indicated, we had net cash of 2.9 billion rand, which is received for the recapitalization of SAPO in January 2019. An amount of 1 billion rand was utilized to settle term loans, and the balance of those funds were utilized to settle historical liabilities. We also received the 475 million rand in the 20 financial year for the funding of universal service obligation, and 42 million rand was utilized for CAPEX in 2020. Thank you. The next few slides are the relation to the annual report, as the Minister indicated. In page 2, in terms of the highlights, the revenue in the annual report was 616 million rand, which changed to a revenue increase by 501 million or 17%. In page 2 of the highlights, there's no change to the DOCX net profit that remains same as 1.6 billion million rand. In item 3, the page 2 is highlights. The recapitalization funds were received of 2.9 billion rand. AG requested we insert the 18-19 financial year, which we will do. So, and that assisted in SAPO's liquidity in terms of meet its liabilities. In item 4 on page 2, the highlights, the motor vehicle license revenue improved by 27 million rand and not 23.9 million rand. So the changes to 27 million rand. Item 5, in terms of the performance indication in page 24, that revenue is also included in the item number 1. So that sentence is deleted. Next slide, please. In item 6 and 7 on page 48, where the operating expenditure for in terms of the human resource performance management should be 6475860 compared to 6434867000, and the personnel expenditure changes to 3891315000, and also the employee cost, the operating cost changes 60%, and the average stock cost per employee is 232,484 rand. And the net in item 8 and 8 and 9 is the director's report on page 68. The change from 1.789 billion rand to 1.768 billion rand. And in item 9, the revenue changed to 4.102 billion rand. And item 10, in terms of the deferred tax note on the 13, it changed to 22165.85. And in note 11, the item that was deferred loss, that was an error and that was deleted on the annual report. Next slide, please. And item 12, the other operating income, the change in 2019 is 223,846,000. And item 13, the cash generated from operations for the company in 2020 was 752, changed to 271,000. In item 4, the next four slides as the presentation is the omission of the notes to the grain concern. Thank you, Gerald.
Okay, thank you, Danny. Honorable chair members, we move on with the last two slides of the deck. I'll try to make it fast. During the year under review, 2019-20, the term of the non-executive directors of the board expired, and new directors were appointed with a new chairperson, that assistant post office. From a leadership, we had the positions of the CEO and CEO, COO, that also became vacant during the year. And the CFO position still remains vacant, which is under recruitment, as you also heard earlier by Honorable Minister. We are very pleased to announce that our new CEO has started, Ms. Nomkita Mona. You heard her a little earlier. And also the CFO position is underway currently. Executive positions are trying to be addressed as we move forward into this year as well, so that we create stability at a leadership level in the organization. The audit outcome, lots of work is getting done to look at how we can change this audit outcome in this new financial year that has just ended. So the work is underway with regards to getting that process moving forward. My last slide on the annual results, looking at the year ahead, we heard from Honorable Minister, we are very pleased. The high focus for post office is to look at the turnaround plan and how we can finalize that, and also to restructure the organization so that we can finally address sustainability and the relevance of the entity. Also, when it comes to the SAFA social grants, we want to look at various improvements that we can do to the system so that we can ensure greater efficiency and also lower the various costs to serve these communities. VDM, when it comes to the digital migration, we also are looking at how we can fast-track this internally within post office so that we can reduce the holding of the various stock that we have and ensure that they're issued to the newly appointed installers. The post-bank corporatization is also very important. We want to look at how we can ensure that there's an absolutely smooth transition when it comes to the post-bank corporatization. data. We're looking at engaging with the agency within our own department so that we can actually stabilize our IT environment within SAPO. And also we're looking at how we can focus that we can move our things when it comes to digitization and identify those solutions that can assist in improved service delivery. Also, when it comes to the SAPO Act, we're looking at amendments that we are working with the department so that we can review this act here and include also very critical services when it comes to diversification and also services that offer digital. E-commerce also becomes very important. We're looking at how we can elevate and increase the role that we play as a hub in Africa so that we can enhance the last mile delivery. And also we are looking at an e-mall that can allow greater access, more especially small business, that they can have a platform and also that they can make available their products and services. Your permission, I'll move straight on to the APP and budget presentation chair. Thank you.
Thank you. As you do that, I just want to remind you of the time spent the time on this. I'll give you up to 1935 if you can try and highlight key issues on the members of the through the document.
Noted here. Thank you very much. We'll speed it up. Okay. Thank you. Members, this is the SAPO corporate plan for the 2021-22 financial year that covers the MTF period until 2024. The post office actually get its mandate from the Act 124 of 1998 so that we can ensure that we have affordable and accessible postal and financial services to all South Africans. The Act also ensures that we must render USO services to those more especially in underserviced and rural communities. Moving on, Chair did this in the previous presentation in terms of our mission. We just did some alignment here when it comes to our values to ensure that we elevate these components of trust, accountability, innovation, excellence, and respect within the values so that we can properly support our mission and our vision as the power staffers. Moving on, we see that the customer value is quite important for us as an organization. We want to ensure that we are easily accessible to convenience, and we have easy-to-use products and services for our customers. When it comes to value, we want to ensure that we have acceptable quality of the various products that we have at the post office and services, but more importantly, that we meet the needs and expectations of our customers. Trust, we must ensure that we move items in what you call a safe and secure handling of all customer items, more especially electronic data, throughout the entire value chain. Reliability, we want to ensure that we have this business that is reliable, consistent, and at speed for service so that we can provide this for our customers. Reach, we have this extensive network of post offices throughout the country so that there's access to our services through our communities. Moving on, Chair, we have to ensure alignment through our department. To make sure that what we are doing will actually contribute to the achievement of the goals of government and through the department. So one of the things we're looking at is the review and expansion of the Act for the Post Office together with the Amendment Bill, which is underway currently with the department. The FMMEs, we're looking at how we can implement our own digital strategy so that we can better support the offering of services and markets to SMMEs. When it comes to the DTT, we want to look at the STB kits for Free State, Northern Cape, Western Northwest, and Limpopo, so that we can ensure that these STB kits are installed in the homes of qualifying citizens. Also, we want to ensure that we increase digital and physical access to government services to all communities. Very importantly for us is to look at how we can enhance our own training of staff more especially when it comes to digital technologies. One of the things we want to look at is how we can better communicate in terms of our various suppliers when we experience delays in addressing their payments. One of the very important things we are going to look at in this year is how we can improve organizational performance and to look at also on our APP that when we plan these targets, that how we can ensure that we implement those remedial actions that are required to get performance on track. Very important for the post office over this new year is we want to focus on how we can modernize and digitize the post office into an organization that actually meets the needs of a modern society. We all know now that we are in this new world, that we need these services to operate more accessible through digital so that we can even maintain social distancing and ensure that we sustain your. So some of these core things are the actually what forms the multi-channel platform that will ensure we have also an e-commerce so that we can scale up in that area there. We want to also look at financial payments that we can ensure that we have a gateway so that when we have customers coming to the office, we can address the various payments that they have. We also have this national warehousing network that we want to look at how we can accommodate various goods of SMMEs and other customers, also to enable e-commerce. We also want to look at this enhancing the last mile delivery when it comes to the national distribution network. Most importantly, we also want to look at how we provide convenient access to government services to all citizens. The roadmap, when you look at this, we've actually linked it up back to our Vision 2030, where we're looking at taking this post office. First, we need to implement the turnaround. To get there, we need to ensure that we have an organization that is actually stable. During this period here over the MTF, we want to ensure that we get that so that we can actually work towards having a modernized organization. And finally, we want to ensure that we have an integrated postal access platform for all customers. Excuse me. Although we are showing this over to 2030, looking at a 9-10 year period, we want to fast track this to faster than that. We want to look at the last mile delivery. You know, we have this extensive network throughout the country, and we want to look at how we can actually strengthen various services through the last mile delivery so that we can have modern postal services that can be optimized through what we have currently so that we can be efficient and effective when it comes to the last mile delivery, ensuring that we improve the customer experience and also that we can enhance real-time tracking and we can ensure that items move faster through the postal value chain. Also, we got a greater focus when it comes to digitization. To look at data warehousing that we want to implement so that the mail services, as we find that we experience declines when it comes to the letter mail, we want to augment that with other digital services, more especially within mail, so that we can have some interconnectedness between the financial and also the parcel physical platforms. What this means here is that we need to have a warehouse, we need to have data analytics and an integrated platform that you'll see also form parts of our objectives we achieved this financial year. So the important things that we think we need to get done to ensure the implementation of the strategy is very dependent on this. One, we need to look at the various forms of funding that we need to acquire to ensure that all that we plan to do in terms of initiatives are fully resourced. We do agree as a post office that we have to refocus on so that we can finally reduce them down to an optimal level. We need to look at inefficiencies in the organization so that we can reduce them. And also we're looking at upskilling our employees. Revenue recovery and growth becomes very, very important for us as an organization. Also, new products and services also is what we want to look at that can augment the declines we face in electric mail. We want to also look at improving service to our customers and also the experience that we offer to our customers. Importantly for us, we want to rebuild the brand to be trusted in the marketplace. And we want to ensure we have engagement of employees at all levels in the organization so that they can better service our customers. I'll hand over to Lenny Gunter to do the financials quickly, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerome. So in terms of the MTEP period, the revenue is projected to increase to 4.8 billion rand, to 5.7 billion rand, 6.3 billion rand. The 2021 financial year has been very tough for the post office, where we've seen revenue declining by 969 million rand, which is reduced to 3.3 billion rand, resulting in a projected loss of 2.5 billion rand. SAPO is busy with the finalization of the 2021 financial year annual financial statements. So the focus on the MTEP period is to normalize the revenue and increase the revenue. The focus to increase the revenue in four areas, which is the courier and parcel revenue, financial services revenue, digital revenue, and property revenue. The postal service revenue, there's only moderate growth in the postal services, which is linked to the tariff increase. So the revenue is projected to increase to 4.8 billion rand in the 21-22 financial year. The focus also is to manage the cost base and to reduce the cost base. The cost reduced to 6.9 million to 6.8 billion, billion rand to 7 billion rand. So we see a significant reduction in the cost in 6.8 billion rand in the 22-23 financial year. If you look at operating loss or the net loss, the loss is focused to reduce to 1.5 billion rand, about a billion rand, compared to the previous financial year, which is further reduced to 561 million rand in the 22-23 financial year and to 139 million rand in the 23-24 financial year. So the focus is to ensure that SAPO maintains its revenue level, increases the revenue, and reduces the cost base to reduce the gap between our revenue and expenses and to improve the cash flow. In terms of the next slide, we look at our non-current assets for the 22 is 7.7 billion rand, which includes the investment of Postbank of 3.5 billion rand, the current assets of 1.7 billion rand, and the cash is negative due to the accumulated losses and the loss position for the MTEP period. And the SAPO does not currently have any approved borrowings, and the accumulated loss has increased due to the loss position, which now stabilized as we go to the outer years. Next slide, please. So in terms of the cash flow we see in 22 financial year, the cash flow requirements from the business is 1.9 billion rand due to the 1.5 billion rand loss projected for the 21-22 financial year. And during the next two outer years, the requirements from the business reduces as the loss position reduces. And the focus is to increase the revenue and improve the cash flow position. Thank you, Gerald.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll move straight to the last two slides that we got. These are the strategic outcomes for this new financial year. They're largely the same that we had in the previous financial year. We've just included business modernization and the digital transformation of this organization so that we can be more relevant as an organization. The last two slides here is the key performance indicators. I'll just cover a few of them. So 2.1, you can see we want to look at the upgrades when it comes to installing security equipment into the branches and the mail centers. The target for the year is 1,680. This is still a very key area for us to ensure that we actually provide a secure environment for our customers and for employees, and also we can reduce some of the costs that we spend when it comes to PIT. We also want to improve on our properties and optimize the various properties that we have in the organization. We want to reduce some of the costs that we have there, but about 255 million rand during this financial year. Very importantly, CN Committee 3.1, where we want to look at how we can resolve these various queries that we get from customers within a 7-day period, and we want to try and drop that a little further so we can do it faster, that we can respond to customers. One of the important things, 4.3 chair, is to roll out the IPS equipment. This will better support what we're doing in terms of tracking of parcels for customers. On the last slide now, chair, here we still have our digital on 5.2 and 5.3. We want to look at implementing these digital solutions and the omni-channel so that we can ensure we have digital offering of products and services to meet the needs of our customers. One of the important things to ensure that we improve implementation, we've included 6.3 to look at how we can monitor implementation of initiatives that have been planned so that we can have a successful improvement in terms of the results and the planned strategy within the organization. In 7.2, we got the amendment of the FTA where we had to give contributions, and 7.1, lastly, chair and committee, to improve the audit outcome by resolving the material audit findings, category A, so that we can deal with audit findings and improve the overall environment of control within the post office and the audit outcome for the 2021 financial, 2022 financial year. Chair and committee, I thank you. That's the presentation from SEPL.
That also.
Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, I would now, without waste of time, use the time that's there for us to really engage with the presentations. You would ask any presentation, and the response would be in the order that the entities presented. I note Honorable Fark, Honorable Fandam, Honorable McKenzie, also Honorable Mbele. I don't see other hands. Honorable Kubeka will be last. I just want to check if I am leaving any hand, committee secretary, other than the ones I've been able to recognize.
Thank you, President.
Okay. So we'll then proceed in that order, Honorable Faku, followed by Honorable Fandam, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Mbele, then Honorable Kubeka. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, greetings to yourself, to the Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the chairpersons of board and the team from all the entities that I am. Chair, first of all, let us appreciate the presentations that we have received. I have a few questions for the SABC Chair and SAPO. My first question is, Chair, I see that about 500 million that was spent on content by the SABC, or let's say 50% of what they have received from them, from Treasurer. That money was invested in content, but when we are getting the results, we were told that the forecast for revenue will be a break even. I just want to understand what are the reasons there for, and there's also the issue of the budget for advertising growth for 2022, the 20% which was it will not be attainable. I just want to understand what is the problem and with regards to that. And how far is the process with the signal cost with NTEC? I think we as a committee have even requested at least NTEC to open those discussions between NTEC and the SABC. And I also see that the process for the analog switch on, the presentation is also indicating that the process is slow. I would want to understand what are the reasons thereof. And then I see that the SABC3 remains a loss-making over the MTF. There were some proposals that were made by the SABC with regards to SABC3. I just want to check how far is that process, Chair. And then the opening remarks from the CEO from SAPO, we appreciate, we welcome you. And we have listened carefully of the commitments you have made. And I think as a committee, we will hold you responsible for the commitments that you have made. Some of the commitments that you are making is the improvement of the audit report, looking into creditors. So those are the things. And I think it's important that one must highlight that you are saying that you have done a customer survey in February 2020 to March. I just want to understand how was this survey done, because I want to believe during that time it was when the COVID levels were very high in the country. What methodology did you use? And I see also your delivery standard has increased. You are currently sitting at 89%. And then your courier delivery matrix implemented has increased. That has increased again there. I think it's important, especially on services like this. It's something that where you are generating most of the revenue, I think that is where you really need to improve in terms of your customers' satisfaction. I think that is where really you need to improve. These are the areas that you need to take on. I see also that you are mentioning that you have improved on your security features and branches. Perhaps if you can, I don't know if I would be more administrative to say, out of the challenges that you had in the past, let's say out of 90 security issues, how many out of those 90 were resolved? And I also see that you are saying that labor has remained stable and we have a headcount that was reduced of 1,871. Perhaps this is something where other entities can learn from. What have you done? Because we have, this was not like sometimes when you reduce the headcount, sometimes it becomes a problem. You know, the issue of retrenchment and all of this. What method have you used to make sure that people don't panic when it comes to this? And then, yeah, so how did you implement it without having any conflict? Let us appreciate also the appointment of 6 regional managers. and then you're also mentioning that there are critical executive positions that will be filled in. Can we perhaps get time frames for that? I see that your mail delivery standard has improved in 2019-2020, and this is where you are generating most of your revenue. So what I wanted to say basically to say that in such areas as well, that where you are really making an impact in terms of revenue, this is where you need to improve in terms of innovation, you know, technology and other ways to improve on this one. And then your expenses have exceeded your revenue. So how would you come out of this? What do you think will be the solution of this? And then you are also saying that your motor licensing has improved and improved by 27 million. So what I want to understand, even with this, you know, when you go to the post offices, sometimes you stand in long, long queues. So when your customer, when you are able to generate some revenue, at least there must be a way on how your clients are satisfied. And then I see that you have 42% of your staff survey that you have done in terms of, so how would you improve that from that to like increasing to that? But also I hear that some of the landlords that we are renting from are complaining about you not paying rent on time and all of those things. So I want to check, how are you going to improve? Thank you, Chair. I'll stop here for now.
Honorable Van Damme, you are recognized. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just say from a kind of broad stroke level to say it is quite comforting that the SABC says it will break even. And I think our biggest concern last year was because of the financial implications of COVID and the decline in advertising, that they could make serious losses and possibly be requesting another bailout, so that they've been able to avoid that is really great news. Because what we've always said is that we want the SABC to break even. Profit would be great, but we just don't want a situation where they keep coming back for bailout. I certainly hope that the concerns we had last year about strife on the SABC board, hope those have been resolved and we won't have to have another meeting with different factions of the SABC board presenting different reports. So I hope that has been dealt with. And from the minister's presentation, it certainly sounds that she and the deputy minister are working well with the SABC. Now, the presentation raises a number of red flags. that are quite concerning. Now, while advertising is the bulk of the SABC's revenue, I see that there's a evasion rate of 75% for TV license fees. Now, that's no small amount, 75%. So it's either historically, the payment of TV license fees has had to do with public perceptions of the SABC. So I don't know whether that 75% is a decrease or an increase, but regardless, the method of collection is not working. And that is something that needs to be reconsidered. 75% is a crazy amount. There is an increase in broadcast costs by 50%, which is very worrying. I, at least, and the committee has repeatedly raised the issue of the unfunded mandates, and we're going to do so again. We're going into an election year where, you know, the SABC is under obligation to broadcast rallies of parties, oversight visits, campaign stops, which cost a lot of money. And over the last year, they've had to cover briefings by the president, by ministers. We are possibly going into a third wave. There's going to be even more of those. I'm glad that the minister is present here because I haven't been able to get a very clear answer about this. Is their money going to be for the unfunded mandate or not? Because it is unfair on us as parliament to say, look, you've made a loss, but at the same time, we do not push for the so-called unfunded mandates to be budgeted for. And I think this is an issue we've raised repeatedly, and it's time we got a clear answer regarding what's happening. I mean, the last time we met, we said the SABC and the minister must meet with Treasury, and this is something where a solution must be found. So just to be fair in our oversight as well. So where are we on the unfunded mandates? The SABC mentions as a constraint the slow pace of legislation and regulation. It is very worrying that years later, the must carry regulations is something that still hasn't been resolved. I don't think it's a hugely complex matter, and I suppose this is something that it constantly needs to answer for. But why is that taking so long? If the SABC can give us their perspective, I don't understand why that is something that has been completed. I remember when the interim board came into office, it was one of the issues that they were quite adamant about tackling. So where are we with that? And then the sports broadcasting regulations. Now, I think that is also a matter that needs closure. I mean, it's quite likely going to be the Olympics, the last I read that the Olympics are going to go ahead. And, you know, South Africans will want to see when, they'll generally want to watch the Olympics, but particularly when South Africans are competing. Now, we all know that the matter of sports rights is a very difficult terrain. It's literally about who has the deepest pockets and can afford to buy sports rights. And we know the SABC is a public broadcaster, and they don't have very deep pockets. And one of the obligations that the draft sports broadcasting regulations had was that they were obliged to kind of somehow find the money to purchase sports rights and for rights that they could quite possibly not be able to afford, and competing with DSTV that actually has the money to afford those. So that was just something that is just practically an impossibility. And just from the SABC side, the update on that, and where they see, where they would like, what they would like the regulations to look like at the end in terms of what they can afford, but also in terms of their role as a public broadcaster and making sure that the public can view major sporting events, especially international ones, ones that grow social cohesions and pride in our country. That's what sporting events tend to do. So it's important that we have clarity from the SABC regarding what they would like. And then the amendment to the Broadcasting Act, that is something also that's been spoken about for years. And I think one key area in the Broadcasting Act that needs to be very clear is firstly what is mentioned in the audiovisual white paper. And now, will the amendments to the Broadcasting Act now await the process of the white paper, on the audiovisual white paper? So are the ultimate amendments that are brought to us going to be after that process has been completed? Because the audiovisual white paper includes a lot of proposals that require the amendment of the Broadcasting Act. So is it something that we must still await? Because I know in annual performance plans, this year we'll bring the amendment to the Broadcasting Act, and never happened. So I think we just need to be given a realistic picture of where that is, at least from where I'm sitting, and the process that still needs to take place with the audiovisual white paper. I don't see it's something that's going to happen very soon. So I think we just need to some honesty in that regard about where that is. The streaming platform. So there was a lot of talk about that at the SABC, about where we were told that that's being built, but there isn't much detail in the APP about that. Is that something now the SABC has abandoned? Because we've always spoken about the need for the SABC to innovate in order to survive and in order to break even and possibly make a profit. And that was one of the key proposals that we supported about establishing the streaming platform, which would be a separate and unique offering to what is out there. That's not included in the APP. Is it something that you're no longer doing, or is it something that's just you can't afford? What's the story? I mean, it was last year, it was hurrah. SABC streaming platform is coming. And SAPO, the issue of the decoders, and the storage costs. Do you still continue to store decoders? At what cost to the department? If I could just get that figure. Is it still the same amount of decoders? If the decoders decreased? And how much are you charging for the storage? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mackenzie, I recognize you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening to you. Good evening to the Minister. Nice to see you again, colleagues from the SAPA, SABC, all protocol observed. If I can just start with the South African Post Office. Firstly, if I can just welcome the new CEO, Ms. Mona. I did have the opportunity to Google you and see your background, and you've got quite a sterling track record in business. Can I just ask you, what attracted you, what tempted you to take this position as CEO with the South African Post Office? Then in terms of your back to basics approach, you know, at this stage, all I can say is, in terms of back to basics, how about delivering mail? Because that is what the South African Post Office should be doing. But let me ask you this question, or these questions. How many turnaround plans has the South African Post Office tabled before Parliament, before this committee, since 2014? So that's in the last 7 years. How many turnaround plans have we seen? Then the second question, how many bailouts have been given to the Post Office since 2014? If you can give me the years and the bailouts, or you can give me a total number, I really don't mind. The value of those bailouts over the last 7 years would be my third question. If I can just touch on the matter of the universal service obligation. I see CAS has now gone to court, and I presume you are cooperating with ICASA in this action to enforce your mail monopoly on items sub 1 kilo. From the intention behind that monopoly was to fund the universal service obligation. And I see the universal service obligation, according to your reckoning, is 529 branches. Can you give me a value? Can you quantify what that is? How much that costs you to maintain those branches. And let me tell you why. You're getting, and this happened under Mark Barnes's watch, where I believe one of the there were two sort of revenue streams that he was, or three revenue streams that he was chasing. The one was SASSA grants, which he got right tremendously so by the looks of things. The second was e-commerce, and certainly you're working on that. And the third was a universal service obligation subsidy. And I believe he got government to agree to that. And I think last year or the year before, you got 10 million as the universal service obligation subsidy. Now, my question is this. If you're getting a subsidy from government for a universal service obligation, why do you need a mail monopoly? Why do you need to enforce that mail monopoly? Now, my second question around the mail monopoly is this. If you are patently unable to deliver post parcels and packaging at this moment in time, and yet other competitors in this space are able to run their business effectively, and I look at Postnet as an example, even in the middle of a COVID epidemic, they were operating. Why are these businesses able to compete? And you're not. And let me tell you why you're not able to compete. You had the Courier Freight Group, which ran the Post Office Speed Services service. It was a very good service. And that went into liquidation. So that was liquidated. And the assets were bought and then put back into the Post Office as a division. You're now going to the South African public and the South African market, and you're saying, give us all your courier business below 1 kilogram. And we will deliver it for you in exactly the same way or as efficiently as the private sector commercial companies are doing at the moment. But your track record says you cannot do that. You cannot run a courier operation. You tried that before and you ended up with that operation in liquidation. So can you tell me your thinking around how you're going to compete in the commercial space with these courier companies who are rendering a fast and efficient service? Another question, please, around your staff. And I'm sorry, you presented a certain picture to this committee of a post office that's healthy and motivated and vibrant, and you were very quick over the financials, and I don't blame you, because they're a horror to look at. And let's be honest. You have staff sitting in your organization that are demotivated. I can't blame them. Their medical aid stipends haven't been paid, unless you can tell me that you have caught up with those. Their pension contributions have been deducted from their salaries, but they don't reflect in their pension accounts. So can you confirm for me that the pension amounts you're deducting from your employees, you're actually putting into the pension fund? Or are you holding that back like you are with the salary increases and the medical aid contributions? Have you managed to sort that out? I think your staff would like to know. Then can you tell me how many post offices, as we speak, are closed for non-payment of rent? A couple of weeks ago, I heard 56 post offices being closed. If you could just confirm that for me. Then if you could tell me, when these post offices are closed, there's an amount of mail that's sitting behind those locked doors, and people can see their mail, and it's registered items, it's medicines, it's all sorts of important documents. How do people collect their documents once a landlord has locked the post office? And if you tell me that the only way they're going to get their document is when you pay your bill, when are you going to pay those bills? Because people want to know, and I get these mails all the time, and I have no answers for customers. Neither do you, by the way. So I was hoping that you could give them in this meeting. You talk about values being convenience, trust, and reputation. My son today went to two post offices. He went to the Leaping Frog in Lone Hill, and he went to Cedar Square. Both of those post offices have no power. They have no power because you haven't paid the electricity bill. How is that convenient, trustworthy, or how does that enhance your reputation as an entity? And you want to deliver every mail item below 1 kilogram. Can you tell me also, do you have any open SIU investigations into the post office, or have you got any completed SIU investigations that have yet to be released? Then another question. The minister, when you opened up, minister, you mentioned that the SAPA will contract an external party to devise yet another strategic turnaround plan. I presume that comes on top or on the back of this corporate plan that is tabled today. Can you tell me who is this company or person that's been tasked to deliver this STP? I was assumed that this was a board responsibility. Who is this? What is the cost? And when is this strategic turnaround plan likely to be delivered? And what are the implications on this versus the corporate plan that you've tabled before the committee today? Then if I could just have a little bit of clarity, please, because I think there's a lot of confusion around this, certainly as far as I'm concerned, and if I'm confused, I'm sure many people are. The Postbank separation from the South African Post Office, as I understand it, the Postbank is all that stopped the Post Office from being declared bankrupt, posting multi-billion rand losses year after year. But the balance sheet was always solid because you had the Post Office on the balance sheet. What happens when you remove the Postbank from the Post Office from April 2020? Now, as I understand it, and with my limited financial understanding, that renders the SAPO bankrupt. Now, if that's the case, and if the SAPO is bankrupt, and you know it's going to be bankrupt, then I must draw your attention, Ms. Mona, and direct at the South African Post Office to Section 22.1 of the Companies Act of 2008, which says a company cannot carry on its business recklessly or negligently, and any director of a company is liable for any loss, damage, or cost sustained by the company as a direct or indirect consequence of the director having done so. So in other words, a director would have the duty to pass a resolution for a company's business rescue or alternatively wind up or liquidate the company. As soon as they become knowingly aware that the company is either financially distressed or is trading in insolvent circumstances. Now, all the directors are aware of this, as is the minister and as are all of we. The post office is financially distressed and it's trading insolvently. Its expenses outstrip its revenue. So you have the Companies Act to deal with. In the absence of any funding from government, and I haven't heard of anything here or in the media, how is the post office, by any metric, trading solvently? And isn't it time for business rescue as a matter of urgency? And Minister, I'd appreciate an answer on that one. Then, if I can just turn to the presentations directly, Mr. Ruthven, thank you very much for your presentation. With all due respect to you, sir, and I don't mean any disrespect, I've seen and heard this before. More times than I can think of. And every time somebody comes in new and fresh with full of vim and vigor and hope, then we buy into this because we recognize the strategic importance of the South African Post Office as a democratic right, as an opposition party. We have always supported the committee, the government, and the South African Post Office. But frankly, we've run out of that. We've run out of rope. We have no more time for the South African Post Office. Because we have literally seen and heard all these presentations before. When I look at the financial projections ahead for a year or two or three, I don't even read them because I know exactly that they're some such figures. And you know that, and I know that. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. In terms of revenue increases for 2 years ahead, You've said revenue will increase based on statutory increases, and I get that. You know, the price of a stamp goes up. But you've done that based on the previous year's revenue, and you just increased it by so much and put that figure in the financials. Yet in your annual report, and I quote, you say mail revenue still remains the main contributor, but on a steady decline due to traditional mail substitutions. So you've acknowledged in your annual report that your traditional mail is declining, and yet you're putting it up as an increase in your revenue for 2 years ahead. Makes absolutely no sense to me. In terms of the security at your branches, you know, I opened up, I have 8 emails open. I was going to read, I'll take all night. I was going to read you sections from that email about rats, about urine, about broken post office, about insecure areas, about informal traders, about vagrants, about littering, about filth, about broken air conditioners, about an endless list where post offices are open. So I want to know, if you're working on security, if you can't even maintain the post office environment, how are you going to do any of this other stuff? So can you just tell me what security measures you put in place, how many branches you've secured with this security? That's my first question. My second question, who supplied the fiber network for the 1,300 branches that were connected, and who is looking after that network? Then my colleague Honorable Van Damme touched on the units, the set-top boxes. I see in the one presentation you say you have 860,000 units. Is that number correct? We had presentations this morning from ICASA and they were talking about a shortage of set-top boxes. So when I said you had all the surplus and you were just dying to get rid of it, the two sort of statements didn't make any sense to me. So if you can just confirm that for me, please. Then Mr. Govender, the 735 million from social grants, whose ever idea it was to bring social grants into the South African Post Office and into government, that revenue, that was inspired. And whoever that person was should get a medal, because if you took that money out, boy, would the South African Post Office be in trouble. Now I want to know this. When you separate the post bank from the post office, what happens to that revenue? I presume it goes to the post bank and not the post office. Perhaps you could confirm to me and how you would intend to make that up. Then in terms of your corporate plan for 21-22, I'll be very quick, Chairperson. The mission, vision and values that you put up there, it's completely dissonant with the post office. You talk about a reputation, completely dissonant with the post office that we all know and used to love. Your communication with suppliers. Don't communicate with your suppliers. Just pay them. I've got open emails here. Again, I'm not going to read them all in, but I've got all these open emails from suppliers that are owed 700,000, 2 million for essential services that they render to the post office, and they have absolutely no idea when they're going to get paid. No idea. So if you could maybe give an indication there. Then when Mr. Mark Barnes was CEO, he introduced the concept of this e-mall. This was his big thing. And I was a little bit cynical at the time. And since then, we've seen Takealot, we've seen Wish, we've seen, there's so many of these. I've used an online mall. It's called I Love Four Ways. And it's a Facebook page, but it's an online mall. So if you want to sell something, you post it up there and you can sell it quite easily. There's a company called Venzi e-mall that launched a little while ago. Jan Parsons were the guys who launched this thing. It's up and running and kicking. So while you're still talking about an e-mall, there are lots and lots of players that are setting these up all over the place, and you're touting this as some sort of white knight on a horse that's going to come and rescue the post office. Can't see it. Your competitors are way ahead of you. They're way out of the starting blocks on this one. You've said you're going to acquire funding. Now, what funding are you going to acquire, and how are you going to acquire this funding? Thank you, Chairperson. I will leave it there for the moment. Thank you.
Bella?
Ngiyabonga sibonga phambili and good evening to everyone on the platform. Sorry, I was just finalizing my last question of my notes. I thought we still had Honorable Fago ahead of me, but I'm ready to go ahead. Chair, I'm going to confine my questions to the SABC. I think we are quite adequately covered by the questions posed by Honorable Mackenzie in terms of the sample side, except maybe just to mention that there's definitely a huge disjuncture between what we were presented at a high level around the intentions and what we have a sense of being the on-the-ground capacity reality around the post office. Just this morning, literally during our morning portfolio committee meeting, I received an SMS complaint from a resident in Etegwini about the Yellowwood post office and how the inadequate queue management leads to people urinating and defecating outside their shop. There's big issues there, but I think we're all quite covered from the previous questions. So, Chair, I would just like to turn to the SABC and pose my questions in that direction. And I just have five questions, so I'm keeping it contained in the interest of time. Firstly, on slide 16. One of the pillars that was stated for goal one being to achieve a financially sustainable organization, the pillar is stated as being to leverage the asset portfolio of the SABC group. But I didn't get a sense from any of the presentation what that would entail. I agree conceptually that notion of leveraging the asset portfolio is a key one for turning around the financial situation and health of the SABC. So could I just ask for you to please unpack briefly and elaborate what the thinking and plans are in that regard? And I'll just mention that, you know, I've been having this sort of growing intuition around how possibly the future space for the SABC might be less around sort of being a traditional and straightforward broadcaster, and perhaps leveraging the assets it has around migrating to being more of a content production services hub platform, or whatever the right word might be. So I'm really keen to share what that thinking entails around the leveraging of asset portfolios. Second, Chair, still on slide 16, another pillar of that goal to achieve financial sustainability was given as being to enhance TV license fee collection. And the revenue projections that were given on slide 23 speak to that. But we know that TV license fee collection has been a chronic challenge for the SABC. Honorable Van Damme also referenced the under-collection figure that was given. And so it's likely to remain that chronic challenge for the foreseeable future. So those projections do seem rather ambitious. And without wanting to be a negative Nancy or to dampen the SABC's outlook in improving that aspect, what gives you the confidence that these projections are feasible and that enhancing the license fee collection will in fact be realized as stated, or at least approximated to that? Thirdly, Chair, there was mention several times actually, and even in the presentation, of increasing competition in the broadcast space. and therefore the resulting financial pressures on the SABC. And that theme very much echoes what we heard as the committee from Broadband Infraco this morning. And really, it's not surprising at all, because that's an endemic challenge that will be faced by any public company or organization that's providing some kind of commercial service, especially where private business is providing a more compelling or convenient value offer. And in that case, all that happens is that customers vote with their cash, you know. Now, goal six on slide 21 speaks to the intention of pursuing strategic and sustainable partnerships. But again, there's no sense from the presentation what that would entail. So linking these two issues of increasing competition, financial pressure, and the intention of pursuing partnerships, I'd like to pose the question that I asked to BBI this morning, also to the SABC and the minister, about the possibility and the opportunity to harness and leverage additional resources and value for the SABC mandates, namely if there's any thinking around or scope for taking a consortium approach to that content production and broadcast mandates with the onboarding of private sector equity partners in some form or another. I know that there's often huge allergy to the word privatization, so I'm not going to go anywhere near there, but we do know that there is value, and there's ongoing talk in other spaces around strategic and deliberate, thoughtful linking up with private sector equity partners in some form. So I really want to table that and get a response. Fourthly, Chair, on slide 10, we were shown a figure of 29 million people audience a week for radio versus 29 million a month for TV. And as a sidebar, I believe very strongly in the idea of organizations having a clear understanding and grasp of what their core competencies and unique value add are. And I think those figures and the contrast between them certainly points to that with regard to the SABC. Just let you know, how are those figures determined? And in particular, how does the 29 million viewers a month figure for SABC TV relate to the channel figures that were broken down and given on slide 13? Because basically the question that comes up or came up for me was that if the SABC is at almost, if SABC 1 is at almost 24 million viewers on average a week, how is it that the average across five channels is only 29 million a month? That might have been a typo, and if so, we need clarity, but those figures just weren't adding up when you were comparing weekly versus monthly and channel breakdown versus the global figure. And then my final quick question, still in the TV news space, slide 32 details that news accounts for 40% of costs. And slide 13, to go back to that, reported an average weekly audience of 7.4 million viewers for the SABC News channel. So my two questions simply are, what proportion percentage of the overall news delivery cost structure does the SABC News channel specifically comprise? And then linked to that, could we be told, maybe it was tabled previously before I joined the committee, but what actually is the unique value add of the SABC News channel as a particular sort of cost structure, given that there are the news bulletins carried on the free-to-air channels? And is there a meaningful and compelling ROI for the SABC News channel? Because this is not in any way to diminish or demean or negate the caliber and the work and the diligence and the quality of content on the channel itself, the people who work there and what they produce, to my observation, has never been in question. I'm asking a contextual question about the SABC News channel in relation to financial pressures, the need for reform, rationalization, and whether it is the most aligned to the ANC, to the SABC's core competencies and true value adding mandates at this time. Because, you know, sometimes one does wonder whether the SABC News channel is not more about the SABC being shown to put up an equal footing to, you know, it's the e-news channel, just so that it can be said, Natis Konala, you know. So can I please just get some substantive and compelling rationale in that regard? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mbele, may I just check before Honorable Kubeka, who was number last, I did get a message sent here by Honorable Faku that as she was concluding, she lost the network. I just want to check if she's back so that she can conclude the points that she wanted to make and then give Honorable Kubeka. I'm also looking at the time that we may not get back to second round of questions because we also need responses on the questions that would have been asked. Honorable Faku, are you back?
Yes, Chair. Sorry, Chair.
Yes,
I just
you can conclude your point.
Thank you. Just to 201 more questions. Chair, can it is also noteworthy that the SABC plans to settle its invoices within an average of 120 days, given the financial and cash flow status of the SABC is expected to increase over the medium term. What are the main challenges that will restrict the SABC to pay invoices within 30 days, as prescribed by the National Treasury? That is one of the questions that I'm Chair. And the second last one, what are the strategic opportunities that are currently being exploited by the public broadcaster within the digital media space, as well as the threats and weaknesses that may exist within the broadcasting sector, given the implications of COVID-19 in the broadcasting sector? And how is the SABC going to respond to this diagnosis or factors? And the last one, Chair, I raised this one. I think that is where that I had network connection. In line with the content investment has already been made and the plans to broadcast newly acquired programs, how does the SABC plan to achieve the maximum returns from the content investment, given channel capacity challenges that are currently confronting the SABC, especially the SABC 3? Those are my last questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Faku. And I will recognize Honorable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to Minister and her team, and also greetings to the two entities that are here today with the boards also, as they are managed to come and have this presentation. Indeed, we are appreciating on that side. Also, let me apologize on the side of the camera, Chair. You know, I'm in the village. I'm having a serious challenge when coming to the issue of the network. Chair, maybe let me start by...
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka.
Yes.
So I was just saying thank you, Honorable Kubeka. I understand the booth and your photo is correct today. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Chair. Let me start by SAPO. to say indeed, based on these challenges that the committee is raising on the side of SAPO, on their presentations, hence we are having the site of the APP and also the annual report of 2019-2020. Indeed, it shows you that in that annual report, they were having 11 KPIs that they were supposed to achieve, plus those 6 ones that they managed to achieve. But you can see that in that report, they didn't work very well. We are saying we have noted that side of saying 11 KPIs is too much. It was better if it was supposed to be on that side of money achieving 11 instead of achieving 6. But we are saying based on those given conditions that were there by then, we will say we will take it into consideration. But indeed, as in this financial year, they have put their APPs and they are themselves who are saying they want to achieve, or they are themselves who are saying they want to turn around the issue of SAPO. And indeed, there are serious challenges on that side, but hopefully so, we will say we will be watching and moving with them in this financial year in order that we can see that indeed, because Chair, we are not talking about rands and cents here. I think you can hear when coming to the issue of the budget, we are talking about billions. So we are expecting to say in those billions, we want to see a service delivery, Chair. But can I just ask on the side of SAPO to say, is it possible also maybe to have on their side the CETA, in order that maybe on side of the systems, CETA must come in and assist in order to make the environment to be easier and to be conducive on that side when coming to the issue of service delivery. So I'm just asking that question to understand it, to say on the side of the systems, because I don't see or think it will be difficult to sit there in order to come and rescue all on the side of the systems, because there is also one of the sisterly entity that we are working with. And also I can hear the chairperson have already raised to say, indeed, they have been affected on a seriously so on the issue when a post bank were being separated with SAPO. So you will imagine on the side of the balance sheet to say what is happening on that side. But I can hear today she is very clear to say, let the compensation be there, because they never been compensated while that decision has been taken on the issue of separating the post bank on the side of SAPO. And then let me come to this one, Chair, to say indeed, we are no longer willing to have listening the story on the side of the STBs. But I hope that maybe today they can give us maybe a turnaround plan also on that side to say, at least up to now, how far are they on that side of the STBs? I hope they are having a plan that they can manage to easy that side of the STBs, because now it's a long time when we are busy discussing about those issues of set-off boxes, Chair. Let me come to the side of the SABC. On the side of the SABC, I'm just having a question to say, we had a GTEC that have managed to work with SABC in order to assist SABC on the side of turning around the SABC. Can I just ask to the SABC to say, did they yield a positive result the side of working with the GTEC there? Or did GTEC bring some positive results in order to make a success on the side of the SABC when they were having this plan to say they want to turn things around on the side of SABC? And also let me come on the side of SABC to say, as they have managed now to say they've retrenched 621, are they saying on that site now, are they going to be stable on the side of their finances? They will at a low stage where the SABC will raise the challenges, because now it was an outcry when coming to that site, even if we were never had that final answer of that 621. We were having something different on the side of the SABC while they were presenting in this committee on the side of the retrenchment. Can SABC say on the side of the audit, are they happy at this moment? And what results are they having on the side of the audit at this present moment as APC? Those outcomes, are you saying now they are convincing to say you are going somewhere, or up to now you are still saying you still need to be given a chance also to push or to try to change on that side of the audit outcome? Let me come to this one of the content of SABC. Indeed, even the government have managed to give a support on the side of the SABC while they were presenting. Are you saying on that support at this present moment, the results that you are having on the side of the content, are you convinced to say you are changing? You are coming with the positive results, or you can just say indeed again in that huge amount that you are presenting to us of 500,000, are you saying no, still you still need one a support on in order that we can say things are turning around on the side of the content of the SABC? Those were the questions that I want just to pose on the side of SAPC Chair. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. I take it that you've completed but not lost the connection in the village there of Parliament. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Yes. Okay, so I take it that you've concluded. I'm looking, of course, honourable members at the time, and in that score, I would be giving space for responses. But because we may not have another opportunity to get back, I will just lift up a few questions asked just for the minister and the entities as they respond comprehensively. They could also take that into account. With regard to the SABC, I think it's a point raised by Honorable Kubeka of saying this number or that number. I take it that if the processes have now concluded, we should, as a committee, be given exact information as opposed to what we get briefed through the media. So that we are sure on the figures that you are giving us as savings as a result of that process. How many workers would have been affected by this? And I know that at some point when we asked the department about interventions, it was a point of waiting for processes to be complete, whether it's retraining or deployment of people elsewhere. They were waiting for this, for the process to be complete. So I think we should be taken to confidence as a committee, but more importantly, given accurate figures, of course, informed by our resolution as the committee, that retrenchment would have been the last resort after everything else has been explored. So there's no inconsistency in that as one asks this question. Just again on a point I think raised by Honorable Mpele, but asked differently in relation to assets and revenue that gets generated from that. Just again on that point, like other members would receive messages from constituents, we are equally being in touch with constituencies, receive this information on different matters. And in this regard, I want to raise a point about the assets, the sale of assets in SAPC as a way of looking at efficiencies and as well as trying to raise revenue out of that. I think in the Northwest in particular, there's been this matter of civil society mobilizing, and I'm in particular talking to an audio that would have been sent from SANCO. I think in the main raising two or three points, one being that in those properties, you would have had SABC employees who would have been in the properties, and in the process of consultation, they argue that there would have not been consultation, including right of first as people would have invested on time and all that. So it's important to clear those for the committee. Second point being raised is an issue of public participation as required by law, and that they argue that that would have also not happened. As a result, on two occasions, one was an occasion where there would block that from happening, more physically blocking. But secondly, on a court matter, without discussing the merits and demerits of the court matter at the High Court, there was an indication that they are also joining the High Court matter in defense of the public on the basis that the law has not been followed. I think it's important to keep the committee abreast of those issues and of course allay the fears that there may be breaking of the law as we try to do something as public institutions. So that's very important, and I'm sure they are following the discussion in that regard. Maybe the other point really is that from one physical meeting we had long before COVID, the SABC, in looking at this point of assets, they were to look also at the stations and all that. And I remember it very well, the advice of the committee on that matter was that whatever you do, please be sensitive that yes, there may be no revenue generated in some of the stations, but very important in our nation building project and respecting diversity in the country. And there was commitment that that would be looked at. Now I'm raising this question on the basis of what we see in the media. Of course, in the absence of information, it's left to different interpretations where a number of, whether it's offices, whether it's the stations themselves seem to be closing up in the consultation. And then you see traditional leadership also rising in protest. And the worry I think we should be having as the committee is whether that could not reverse the gains made in ensuring that the unity of the country is preserved, that takes into account diversity. So as you respond, if you can speak to that. On SAPO, I just wanted to check, including yourself, Minister, if you can give sense of direction here, that the amendments that have been put, which are in the annual report, more of what has been presented in the financial statements as audited, would have been carried to the annual report differently. And we are considering an annual report as submitted to Parliament. and the HSA indicates that there'll probably be a resubmission in that regard. I just wanted to check whether shouldn't we be looking at a finalized report there, that the corrections would have been made, including the discrepancies that Honorable McCain was speaking to, because those are matters, I think, that were to be addressed by this meeting, which I thought would have resolved the matters, so that we don't prolong it much. But secondly, this is also informed by the fact that the report we are talking about on the annual, it's 1920, which would mean the 1st of April 19, and then the end of March 2020. Which in this regard, correctly, it may confuse the situation if you are bringing figures of January 2019 as those would have belonged to another financial year, and therefore changes the picture in how we look at the figures, whether you talk revenue or expenditures made. So I just want you to keep this as you respond. Again, when you look at the response on actions for the year ahead, it would also mean that would have been 2020-2021. And the question would be whether there's been any strides made to change the situation, and if not, at least clarify the committee so that we don't prolong the discussion, that this is a matter that is still coming in this current financial year, necessarily because there would have not been action in the 2020-2021. Of course, the pandemic would have also complicated matters. So I just thought it's important to clarify that point. Just on the set of boxes and the money that SAPO would have been getting through storage, and you'd want to still continue to be a warehouse that could render services in that regard. Just on the partnership that you presented before the committee on new set of boxes where SAPO would be warehousing but also play a retail role in terms of that partnership, whether that is still an issue or not. Maybe the last point would talk to the going concern question and the strategies that have been developed. I would want the minister and the entity, just for the committee, to also know the areas of support that are expected from the committee. Will it be correct to come to a conclusion that necessarily whatever turnaround strategy, whether it is through technical or transaction advisors that we may want to bring on board, that there will still be a need for support for SAPO, whether through the fiscals, which is what would be called the bailout, understanding the impact of the separation of the bank, or indeed, like it is already said, whether that is also dependent on compensation for the investments that SAPO would have made to the Post Bank as they were looking into the future. So that at least we are clearer in the way we assess the ability of SAPO turning itself around, that it will not be something that will just happen. Probably there are dependencies in that regard. But we would want those to come from yourselves so that we know which areas we would need to support in that regard. So as you respond, if you can also touch those as a way of comprehensively responding to the question. Ajira, you would then just help us that the few minutes of extension to allow the entities to respond. Otherwise, it would not help to just ask questions and don't give them space to respond comprehensively. Minister will be then guided by yourself whether you'd want to come in first or you'd want to leave the entities to respond, and maybe at the end also try as part of intervention to close gaps that you think may need to be more clarified. But we'll be guided by yourself in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I'm just going to try to start in terms of responding to the issues that affect us as the executive authority. And of course, I will leave the operational issues to the accounting authority and therefore the management of the respective agencies that are here. I'm going to start, Chairperson, of course, thanking the honorable members for the detailed questions that were asked and certain statements in relation to the overall functionality and operations of the agencies outside the corporate plan. As I'm going to look at those, Chairperson, and I said the corporate plan and all those will be responded to by the respective and responsible people. The question I would like to start with, Honorable Chair, on the issue of the SABC and the unfunded mandate, whether as the department we have or we can give guarantee to the portfolio committee on the fact that we have applied or there is going to be funding from National Treasury for this. Let me first say that this currently the engagements that are being held at official level, which are led by the DG, who is the accounting officer in terms of the PFMA, and those processes need to start at that level before they are escalated to the executive authority. And of course, the SABC has submitted proposals, which are being reviewed by the department and National Treasury. And once those issues, honorable members, have been ironed out with the SABC management, then a recommendation will be sent to the minister who is responsible for budget vote according to the PSA and of course the PFMA. And then after that period, then it may then find expression in the legislative amendment if need be, of course, pending recommendations from the DG Fora, that's the DG of our department, Treasury and others. The other question, honorable members, that relates to the work of the executive authority and the shareholder department in line with the appointment of experts, as Honorable McKenzie inquires. He wants to know the cost, who's going to be appointed or who is appointed, and whether this is not the responsibility of the accounting authority, which in this context is the board. And therefore the alignment of the work that's going to be done. As we have said previously, when we committed to the portfolio committee and the House, when we took a decision to say we're going to intervene at SAPO by appointment of experts. This of course, Chairperson, if we read the SAPO Act, it does make clear provisions for intervention by the minister in terms of the financial challenges that are experienced by the entity. The law empowers the minister to undertake that. So this is not the responsibility of the board or some interference. But as I stated earlier yesterday, that we are responsible for budget vote and therefore how things are done, which therefore the accounting officer gets to be the one that monitors the spending and everything that goes with it. So the law does empower us to look into that, to say you can conduct an investigation as the executive authority in the event that you see that the agency is not doing well. This is why we then took a decision. And of course, honorable members, I get the concern that there's been so many turnaround plans and everything, but we're still where we are at. But firstly, I just want to say, the overall gist of what I'm saying is that the legislation allows us to do that. Of course, it is largely in our discretion to decide on the details of the intervention, as I said, as defined within the law, what we can do and what we cannot do. And that process is being funded by the department, just like we had done with SABC, to say there's a need for us to get external people, hence we appointed ZTEC in the context of SABC. It is the same process that we are providing to say we want to look beyond just the lack of implementation of the turnaround plans, the fact that there's been so many bailouts that have been given, even when we make reference to what the work that has been done during by former CEOs. Again, the bailouts, when they were given their specific tasks to say, we are giving you this amount, 3.8 billion, go and do IT upgrades. And those IT upgrades were not done even by those former CEOs that were there, which is what we are seeing now, a result of the failure of implementing that was supposed to be done as part of the turnaround plan, and of course as part of the bailout that had a specific mandate. This is why now we are saying we want to look at the critical reasons, what are the root causes and the other contributing factors that we find ourselves today saying there's been so many plans, but still there's no improvement. There's been so many bailouts, but there's no problem. What are the reasons? Because it cannot be that it's just executives or the boards. So that's what the team is going to look in order to complement the work that is being done by the management now to say, this is how we plan to turn around SAPO. So this process, Aikabane, it goes hand in hand with that is in the APP. And the experts cannot come and develop an APP. They are coming to look at the areas that are not implementable in the APP based on the things that I spoke about. Therefore, they have to just come and look at that. The overall turnaround plan was approved in June 2015. That was the overall turnaround plan of the post office. And therefore, all other turnaround plans and corporate plans were drawn and aligned from that one. That was the overall. Now the current intervention is to ensure that the overall review to reorganize and reposition in the digital era, and of course also taking into account elements that were not there when the overall plan was developed, such as the post-bank separation, was all of those did not envisage that. Now that we are here, these interventions that we're making, as you correctly put it, that the impact, which is what we have explained, several times to the portfolio committee, and as I said, the 2015 plan is used as the base to develop the new ones. And of course, as I talk to this on honorable members, in terms of the post bank separation, we are working hand in hand with National Treasury, and we are clear that there's a need for compensation of the post office in relation to this. So the officials, as we undertake certain processes, the Treasury and the department and some of the officials are from the affected agencies are involved to say, now we have not only quantified, but we have costed the impact, and therefore government has to come on board, not doing a favor to post office, but to say, we do understand that you spent money in establishing and making sure that the post bank becomes functional to an extent that honorable members today are saying the removal of the post bank from the post office will have a negative impact in terms of the value of the CBC, which is true. And this is what government has committed to do in terms of the shareholder rep ourselves and the National Treasury. As I said, Chairperson, the other operational matters will be dealt with by the board. But just to get into the issue, again, another question that was asked in relation to the work that we are doing in line with the audiovisual policy and the amendments of the Broadcasting Act. These processes are independent. On the Broadcasting Bill, it deals with the governance and management of SABC only. That's the only thing. Then if you go to the audiovisual policy, it deals with a broader audiovisual sector, be it public, commercial, community, and content regulatory matters. So they are going hand in hand, but independent of the other, there's no need for us to say we are pausing now on this one because the other one is in process. On the issue of the AG, person that you asked, we've got, as I said, we've received written correspondence that the report is now complete with the amendments and editing. And of course, we are going to update the report. As I reported earlier, AG has confirmed that they are comfortable that the post office can finalize this report. So those are things that I can respond to in relation to the work that we are responsible for. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to... Oh, the other question that was asked, I think it's Honorable Mbele, on the fact that are we considering strategic equity partners? Okay, he says he doesn't want to use privatization. We are not at this time. We are looking at what the board and the management of SABC has given to us in the turnaround plan to say this is how they're going to change things at SABC. And when that time comes, if we are going to need that as the shareholder rep, we will then consider everything in the impact, including an analysis if, as we continue to get into bringing on board these strategic equity partners, has government really gotten any value in terms of the objectives that it wants to achieve? And therefore, if we have, how do you make sure that they can be the best of whatever agency in line with the mandate that the agency must drive? So currently, as things stand, as the shoulder rep, we are not exploring any of the equity partners in relation to SABC. Chairperson, I will then hand over to the chairs or whoever that is delegated by the chairs of our agencies to respond to the operational matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Minister for the opportunity, and thank you, portfolio committee members, for your input and questions. In what I will do, I will just allocate questions to the executive team, because a number of questions were asked that talk to specific segment of our business. So the CFO will come first, Yolande van Billion. She will be followed by the COO, Mr. Plakis. And then the next one will be GE Mellon, followed by Reggie on the sales side. And then the last person will be Ms. Magubeni on the news side. That's the order of our responses. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you very much, my chairperson of the board, honorable chairperson of the committee. Here with the responses to selected questions that I can handle. And honorable Faku, just to confirm that as part of our bailout, we applied for 800 million rand of content funding. We have spent practically all of that in the past 12 months. And the return on investment you see in how the revenue numbers are increasing in future, it's on the back of what we believe the investment allowed us for towards fresh and compelling content. And just to confirm, should you have observed the 500 million referred to on my slide 29, it is where I speak about cash flow. The majority of that, literally almost all of it, relates to the CapEx funding, which is funding that's been delayed partly as a result of interruptions on the supply chain processes in the past year, as well as how we are able to use internal capacity to execute on it. As far as creditors' days are concerned, the PFMI allows us to pay 30 days from invoice or as otherwise negotiated. As I indicated in my presentation, there is literally about three or four strategic suppliers or service providers whom we engage with should we require to extend payment terms. All the other service providers, and particularly the small to medium entities, are paid within 30 days from the invoice or when we process it, and we therefore believe we do comply with the PFMA in this respect. Honorable Van Dam, you had a comment around the broadcast cost and the increase thereof. Just to confirm that the increase is as a result of the fact that broadcast cost bears a direct relationship to increase in revenue because we pay royalties. So the majority of that increase is as a result of the royalties that increase because we have our revenue increase. And then there is our audience research panel that comes on stream, as I indicated, which is also a critical deliverable in terms of our turnaround strategy. Moving on to Honorable Mabele,
as far as the Dinner Strategy Initiative leveraging our asset portfolio is concerned. We look at our asset portfolio in two categories. There's the non-core assets, which is also related to the chairperson's questions, and I'll deal with the chairperson's questions there in a moment. But we have decided, having followed a process which started with an audit, a comprehensive audit of all our physical properties, land and buildings, that specifically categorized our properties into non-core and core. And we are in the process currently of divesting from the non-core properties. This having followed a board resolution, it's in response to a national treasury precondition. We have applied our materiality and significance framework, and in terms of the relevant PFMI sections, secured approval to proceed with these disposals. With respect to our media assets, we did quite an extensive amount of work in developing a matrix, we call it a framework, that following a number of decision points and criteria that's weighted in terms of significance, where we categorize our media assets in terms of core versus non-core. And the goal with that activity was to ensure that we're able to get more efficiencies from our assets in terms of their utilization, to secure funding opportunities should it be necessary, and where opportunities present itself to seek partnerships, not equity partnerships, but partnerships in, for example, content development, et cetera. So that is how we look at leveraging our media assets. When it comes to news, the way I understood your question, Honorable Mabele, about the cost structure, and our GE will speak more around the meaningful and compelling ROI, the news platform contributes 710 million rand to the cost of the overall organization. And as I indicated, looking at our cost of mandate information, it contributes 2.2 billion rand over a three-year period. Honorable Kumbeka, you had a question around positive results from the GTEC intervention. Yes, absolutely so. It was a very constructive and a useful activity for ourselves to make use of the expertise that resides in that entity. And I think what we can report here today is definitely they contributed to it as well. On audit results, we reported a qualified findings audit opinion in the past audit. The main reasons for the with finding part is the fact that we're still struggling to ensure that our irregular expenditure register is complete, and also to avoid the non-compliances that typically presents itself in the supply chain environment. There's been an extensive amount of work invested in trying to address these two weaknesses. And we are really hopeful that we will be able to see the return on investment on the effort that has gone into that activities. Then, Chairperson Manele, just to finalize the response on the Northwest properties, noting what I indicated earlier, it maybe is just worth noting that the relationship we have with the tenants in the residential properties are that of a landlord and a lessor. I think, or let's see, I'm never quite sure, but it is then guided by a lease agreement, which was an annual lease agreement, and all the legal challenges to date, and there have been a few, we have managed to defend successfully. And as such, and having noted the process we followed to reach the decision and the point where we are today, we are still confident that we have followed the appropriate process. And at that point, I will hand over to my CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll take some of the questions. The first one is raised by Honourable Faku, and that was in connection with the signal cost from Centec. So if we look at that, we are in final stages with the discussions around that with Centec. We do have a mandate from our board as well to expedite that and to look at all possible ways of pursuing that cost reduction. So we are in those discussions at the moment. In terms of Honorable Van Damme's question around the Olympics, and the sports rights. I can confirm that we have acquired the rights for the Olympics, and we will certainly be broadcasting the Olympics. We have also, and we are in discussions with ICASA around the regulatory review of sports rights, and that has also been included in the white paper review in terms of our strategy around OTT. You will be able to see the details of that on pages 31 and 36 of our corporate plan. It is definitely a strategic project for us. You will see the breakdown of that for this financial year as well in quarter one. We are busy finalizing the approvals of that, and we hope to go to market in quarter two. In terms of the chair's question around the radio stations, yes, Chair, there has been misinformation in the media. We have clarified that as well. And maybe just to put it on record for the PCC as well, immaterial of radio stations' revenue generation, whether that is positive or negative, the SABC has no plans of closing down any radio stations. In fact, the reverse is true, that we have growth plans for every single radio station. What we are doing is consolidating certain offices, and that's part of our cost-saving initiative that is aligned to our new target operating model. I can categorically state as well that where we are consolidating offices, we are not impacting the news staff and the news to be able to generate news from the local areas at all. So thank you very much, Chair. I hand it to Merlin, my colleague.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. In terms of the questions that I'm going to answer, I'm just going to fill in some of the blanks. I think there was a question on S3. What is the latest in terms of that strategy? We started deploying the S3 strategy from the first Monday in April. We've already noticed, looking at the audience figures, a growth of 300,000 new viewers on the channel. So we're already up. Some of our segments are growing faster than others. You'll see the programming slate has changed. So the strategy is definitely in effect. We're now monitoring that with some slight tweaks. We've changed the branding as well with a new payoff line of S3 Open Up. So definitely seeing some fruits coming in there. In terms of the revenues against the channel, it's still a bit early days. We would measure it on a monthly basis for the first quarter and review that in terms of whether we need to make major pivots to the strategy. But so far, everything seems to be on track as we are proceeding. In terms of the digital space, what are we doing projects in the digital space? We started off very slowly with a refresh of the websites. So S1, 2, and 3 off of the main corporate site has been refreshed. It has a more television-based look and feel, promoting the content and being driven by icons and images from the content as consumers are more readily experienced in terms of accessing their content. The next level is to start streaming, but that ties in with our OTT strategy as well. So we're gearing up ourselves for that as we planned. In terms of the Olympics broadcast, Ian has touched on this. The current dates set are 23rd of July until the 8th of August. We already have quite a detailed plan. What we are doing is revising the plan from a digital perspective to ensure that we do have the right coverage, noting that Tokyo is 7 hours ahead of South African time. So we've got to deal with the time difference and the event difference as well. So we're finalizing those plans, also noting that we are operating within COVID restrictions. So waiting for the Olympics Committee to come back to us on the finalized schedule of events for us to proceed on that one. There was a question on the numbers. I'll just indicate that the numbers are snapshots at a particular point in time. The first page that referred to the total reach was based on monthly, and then the second page that split up the channels was based on weekly. So if you add them up, you're not going to get the same number, because a monthly target and a monthly range and a weekly range are totally different numbers. But safe to say that SABC 1 commands the highest viewership of the SABC channels. It's probably averaging about 60-70%. Then SABC 2 coming in the middle, and then S3 at the tail end, probably about 10-15% on that side. It does move on a regular basis based on the day of the week, the week of the month, and the month of the year as well. So it reflects a universe size at that particular point in time. So I trust that answers that. I'll hand over to Nada from radio. Thank you.
Chair, sorry, my colleague Reggie will go next to discuss the revenue question.
All protocol observed. Good evening. My name is Reggie Nyamalo. I'm the GE for revenue or for sales within the SABC. I think there's two points that I want to talk to that were brought up by the honourable members. The first question centers around the just the turnaround activity around revenue, I suppose confidence levels and what informs that. And then the second question is around TV licenses as well, given that we've had, call it a very low response rate from certain consumers. So from a revenue performance perspective, I'd like to share with you that we've been on ascendancy over the last 12 months, actually, and most of the last two quarters of the year, we've just been on an up and up significantly. We've even broken certain in-house records from a sellout perspective, where certain spots on you couldn't buy a slot and spots, if you will, on our channels in November during peak. So we've put together some amazing trading models and we continue to trade to take advantage of ad spend that's available in the market. And one thing that's probably worth noting as I conclude on this point is that it's extremely difficult to compete with a competitor that does not need ad spend or ad revenue in the form of one of our competitors who generates their revenue based on subscription and not on advertising. So on advertising, they basically give away advertising. They really cut deep from a discounting perspective. But be that as it may, our audiences remain our currency, and that's what we package and take to market. From a TV license perspective, it's an open secret that consumers have been under pressure in the last fiscal, given the pandemic and work situation. So there's been visible pressure in that regard. But we're pretty confident going into the new fiscal that the various initiatives that we've put in place will help us recover the revenue losses. So we have two big campaigns. The one is obviously above the line to persuade, and I think you've seen some of those elements on or some of those promotions on TV where we tell stories or success stories of individuals that benefited from SABC and therefore encouraging consumers to buy a TV license to pay their TV licenses. Right at the beginning, the minister was also partook in that initiative it was unfortunate that we had to change tack there, but yes, those are some of the softer campaigns. And then secondly, there's other tighter campaigns like SMSs and so forth, which really, really work well. Without getting into too much detail, there's certainly we're really bullish about the activities that underpin the revenue.
Not sure if it's on my side. I can't hear anymore.
It's not on your side, Jefferson. I also can't hear from my side.
Mr. Newman, are you?
Sorry, Chair. It looks like we've lost him. Maybe if I could just conclude on what you were saying. Reggie, are you back?
Maybe for the sake of time, you can proceed to see.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Evening, Honorable Members. Basically, just to conclude, the other point that we're going to touch on from Reggie's point of view was the question that was asked in as far as the progress on the turnaround plan. We can confirm that 74% of all key activities on the turnaround plan have been completed, being mindful of the fact that this is 17 months into the 36-month implementation period. We do believe that we're seeing quite a good traction in as far as the implementation of the strategy is concerned, with a focus on revenue generation. Month on month, we've seen quite significant improvement against target. Also, when it comes to radio, we've also seen quite good growth when it comes to listenership. The other point that the CFO has already spoken to is the issue around ensuring that the stricter internal controls and adherence to governance. So, overall, Chair, we can confirm that we're seeing very good progress in terms of the turnaround plan. The aim now is to ensure we accelerate for the next 17 months of the implementation period of the turnaround. Thank you very much. If I can then hand over to Ms. Makopeni on the news question.
Thank you, CEO. Good evening, Chair, and all honourable members and the Minister. Mine is to conclude the question that was asked around the news channel. Part of it has been responded to by the CFO, Yolande. And I want to point to the fact that the news channel is not just a DSTV is not just carried on DSTV, it's also on DTT. So those households that already have the set-top boxes have access to the channel already. So the existence of the channel is not necessarily to compete with commercial entities, but it's about providing immediacy and remaining relevant to those audiences that are looking for consuming news content as it happens at any time of the day. So it's primarily serving that purpose. And where the cost is concerned, news gathering for SABC News is for the entire entity and not individual platforms. To the extent that if you look at the economies of scale that we are able to achieve as a result of providing content in the different platforms that we serve, the cost of producing news is then spread over all those platforms. We provide news content to the 18 radio stations, and we also have digital platforms, and we have a dedicated sabcnews.com platform that has a different purpose, but within the same space. We also have the free-to-air channels, provide news content, and the dedicated news channel, which is what we are talking about now. So the cost is actually spread across all the platforms and not just to the news channel. And in fact, there is no dedicated news gathering activity that's directed at the channel alone. It serves all the platforms as we have them as the BBC News. And the other aspect in terms of the context, it's that the newsroom integration talks to exactly the issue of dealing with the content that's gathered for the entire entity. But it also addresses the shelf life and the footprint of the content that it doesn't get restricted to the one bulletin a day provision that we see on free-to-air channels. It is correct that the heavy consumption in terms of television news sits on free-to-air channels, but it is largely driven by the fact that it's language-specific in terms of its treatment. So you are likely to have more audiences on free-to-air as people seek to consume their news content in their languages of choice. But where the news channel is concerned, the world has changed. News consumption patterns have radically changed globally. So we have to go where the audiences are, and we have to adjust to their information and news needs and ensure that we are where they are and we provide the content they seek to consume at the different times when they do. So its presence, the presence of the news channel, also links directly to the need for digital presence, because they run concurrently. Whatever you're going to find happening on the news channel, it's also on the go on digital platforms as the content gets produced. And it's also a forward-looking approach to have the news channel. So if we were to confine it to the current constraints in terms of finances, we are going to miss the boat, because there's a lot that we still have to do to actually get to a level where we can say we have full global presence and we get all our global audiences that have access to our content or have interest in accessing our content served, because we actually have a heavy presence of audiences that consume our content outside the country and outside the continent. So it's not merely an issue of addressing the current constraints. We also have to be forward looking in the way we design and provide services to our audiences. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think that's all from our side. I want to hand over to the Honourable Chair of the committee.
Chair, we have missed one question just to close up on our side. That's the issue of staff optimization.
Sorry, please go ahead.
Please
proceed. Chair, thank you very much. I'll get straight to it. Yes, Chair, I can confirm that as at the 31st of March, the total number of employees that have exited the system was 621. And of those, 275 is forced retrenchment. Those are the employees that occupied positions which were redundant. And those are the employees that explored the alternatives, but they couldn't be placed. Of the balance, which is 346, are the employees that opted for voluntary severance package. And all this cohort of voluntary refers to all those employees who chose severance as the first option, and they did not avail themselves to participate in any alternative seeking process. We can confirm that majority of the VSP applicants were coming from the support functions, such as finance and logistics, human resources, corporate affairs and marketing, and they were not coming from the core of our business. Would we be able to achieve and realize the targets as set in that space? We are on the right track, and we are positive we will be able to reach that target on the side of staff optimization. The annual total guaranteed remuneration package of that cohort that have left is just above 457 million. And you will recall, Chair, that the severance packages were voluntary and the severance packages were self-funding. So the total cost of that is just above 164 million. So we will be able to realize the saving in the new cycle. In this, we will break even on the fifth month, meaning to recover the cost of severance. And we will then realize the savings of just above 292. Bearing in mind that the second strategy towards that is to implement the no salary increase for the maximum at most of 3 years, we then anticipate that the 292 savings plus the zero annual increase will ultimately take us to the 600 million. And with the three alternative proposals that we have put on the table, once successfully implemented, we will fully reach the target of the reduction of the salary bill in 3 years of 700 million. Thank you very much, Chair.
Sapo?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Chair of the Board has asked me, on account of time, to just go straight onto the platform. I'd like to call upon Gerald to go first, then Acting CFO Lenny to follow him immediately, and then the Acting COO would then follow, then I will conclude. Over to you, Gerald.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable Chair and members, I'll try to respond to some of the questions. One was, how does couple do the survey with customers? So we had it differently around this time. And what we've done is that we use Google Forms, where we developed a questionnaire of about 10 questions, which was actually done electronically. We've did send out this link to our customers that received SMSs from PulseSuffers to come click Borsos. We resend them SMSs and ask them to undertake the survey so they can write us. We also put up notices in Pulse offices advertising the addresses so that we could get their responses also to the survey. We use the same platform also to undertake our employee satisfaction survey. When it comes to SAPO's security program, we are looking at different types of equipment, which actually started the year before last. That we wanted to upgrade and refresh so that we can strengthen the security environment. What has happened is last year we've had some challenges. We were unable to move with the program. To date, we've achieved almost about 43% of the overall program completion. We're anticipating to fast track the balance of the 57% moving forward in this year and next year. When it comes to SAPO's network, the network upgrade has been undertaken by Telkom and its and BCX as its subsidiary to assist SAPO to move through the fiber network. The TTT program is a key program for post office. We had about 860,000 STB kits lying in our warehouses throughout the country. To date, we managed to issue 50,000 of those units to the newly appointed installers. We currently have a balance of 810. We're also working with the department to try and prioritize this so that we can increase the number of installations to meet the shortened deadline. On staff reduction, there was a question of staff reduction. SAPO in the previous year reduced the overall headcount by 1,871 employees, and this largely rolled on the back of a VSP that was offered to employees. So we had about 730 people that left through that, and because this was mutually agreed with the employees, they managed to take up this offer from the organization. We did have a challenge there where we did lose some skills from the organization. And but yes, we found that it did work. It also requires investment so that we can have a future benefit in the reduction of the numbers. Moving forward, Honorable Chair, there was one on the year ahead from SAPO's annual results presentation. You are correct. We experienced a 1 year delay due to the audit being completed late. And therefore, the year ahead actually focuses on currently where we are. so that we thought we can just beat the committee on what we're looking forward to in this year financial year. It was not the previous financial year. You are correct. It was from my side. The last one is that we did have a sort of partnership that we wanted to go out on to look at how we can have retailing of set-top boxes at post offices that will account for the unsubsidized market. We embarked the process to go into partnership. Then we've had an audit in terms of the process being irregular. And we want to look at in this new year that we can conclude the process so we can still allow this to accommodate the overall DTP migration program. Chair, that's the responses from mine. I'll hand over to Becky Steffel, Lady Carpenter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll provide feedback on two questions that was asked. The first question was the storage cost for the decoders and setup boxes. The monthly cost is 5.6 million rand, which is anticipated to be reduced monthly as the stock is issued. The second question was on the social grant, where we reported revenue of 735 million for the 1920 financial year. That is revenue earned by SAPO for SAPO's transaction, so that's not post-bank revenue. So that revenue will remain with SAPO. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Usuan Sigeni. I'm the acting COO. From my side, I will respond to a couple of the operational questions that were asked, starting with the questions that came from Honourable Fagu in terms of what we plan to do in terms of the SLA function and how we managed to increase it to 89%. There we automated some of the services, especially in the hybrid mail part of things, which allowed us to get to that point. And we focused a lot at clearing backlogs, and also we focused on the transport component of the service. There was also a question with regards to the MVL improvement. What we plan to do and what we've already done is to add more MVL machinery in the busy offices, which we've already identified and handed over to the Department of Transport, and the respective regions have engaged on it. We've also asked them to train additional staff so that there's more than just two people that are able to dispense on the MVL side of things. We've given them the specific figures, and we are working with them towards getting more machinery and also replacing stolen machinery timeously, because that also adds to some of the challenges that come through. There was also a question in terms of what are we doing in terms of queue management. For queue management, we work closely with SASA, and they've assisted us a lot, in the sense that we've got separate grant days, which we were able to implement during the COVID shutdown from May last year, and it improved the queue management quite significantly. With regards to the SRD, with the advent of SRD, we then introduced a separate queues, so that as you come to the municipality, you are able to do normal day-to-day transactions, which is separate from the SRD queue. And within the SRD environment, we've also further differentiated the payment days in line with the last three digits of their ID numbers. Over and above that, there's a messaging service that comes through to the beneficiaries that tells them, based on the area where you registered, and based on there's also a system that we've put through in collaboration with SITA, where the beneficiary is now able to register which branch they would want to use. This assists with planning purposes, and it also assists with the queue management. So with all these inputs, the queues have improved, but further to that, we are collaborating with CETA in terms of looking at kiosks as well as geolocation of the beneficiary's cell phones so that we are able to plan much better. There are other functionalities that we've partnered on with CETA. It's the IT infrastructure. We've also partnered on e-services and mainly at e-complaints and the electronic document delivery system, as well as grant notification so that we are better enabled to engage directly with beneficiaries should there be any messaging that is required. So this too will be assisting with the queue issues that we have. We've also collaborated with them with the queue management systems, data analysis and data mining, as well as the international financial system that the postal union uses. Insofar as the landlord rental payment, this I will link to the questions that were asked by Honorable McKenzie in terms of the offices that are currently unpaid. There's plus minus 11 with the total amount of plus minus 4 million. And going back and just moving on to the questions that were asked by Honorable McKenzie in terms of the USO, there's a USO question linked asking how much does it cost to maintain each branch? This is a very, is not a simple question to ask because it varies. It varies from branch to branch, but I'll just articulate the components that lead to the cost of a branch. The first part is the ownership. It depends on whether we own it or rent it. And the rental varies from area to area and depending on the size of the branch. So we would need to have a specific branch to be able to tell you what exactly, but we do have those figures at branch level. So where it's SAPO owned, we will then include the rates and taxes that comes with that. And when it's a rental, we put the rent. And then the second factor we look at is utilities in terms of electricity and water, sewer, and so on. That would add to the cost, as well as equipment. In some areas, we would be leasing equipment like photocopying machines. In other areas, we own all the equipment. And it's also linked to staff, the staff numbers and the experience of the staff. So it depends on the staff that is there. So all that then adds to the total number of a particular branch in terms of costs. And then there was a question around how the post office would be able to compete. Generally, what we are looking at in terms of competition is its automation within our mail centers, strengthening of the last mile, reskilling of our staff with and moving some of the services in-house that we are currently outsourcing, such as your facilities management and so on. The next question that I have here is the CSG component, how we will be able to do it without CSG. We currently have a speed services that already covers this part of the space. This is over and above the normal post delivery service that we have, which I've referred to as the last mile. So we do have an overnight service in terms of courier. We've got economy service, and we also have a freight business to business service that covers. And all of these, the first one is a 24 hour service. Economy is a 48-hour service. Freight is 5 to 7 day service. So that we do have that part in the establishment. There's also a question in terms of, linked to it is also the fact that we are engaging our staff. So we are trying to motivate our staff. We've brought in some gamification in the process, and we are engaging them day to day in terms of what we are doing, what is happening, and why. And we've set up smaller circles within the operations team so that they are able to articulate what is happening within the institution. So communication is something that we've invested a lot in terms of time, and we will be focusing a lot on change management. We are looking at discipline enforcement, just adhering to the normal processes and rules of the post office, as well as an stringent performance management, which is part of that. Just looking at my notes. Okay, the other question is, what do you do with those that are post offices that are closed and the staff inside? In most instances, we engage with the landlords, and so far, depending on what is critical in that particular post office. So if it's something that is critical, we are able to motivate it to the landlord and get some of the things out of there. In other situations, it's a payment scenario. And in some situations, because we do have a network distribution strategy in the post office, so some of the forced closures, we do have a relocation strategy that we are concurrently working on, and we do that as well. I think this brings me to the end of my particular responses. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Zuki. In closing from our side, honorable members, I just wanted to say that in the post office, we've lost almost 50% of our traditional mail revenue. And this is due to exogenous factors, including the technological advancements, but also the COVID-19 did have an effect on this. So headcount then becomes one of our Achilles heels, because it remains constant even though we've lost a lot of money. Then in terms of what Honorable Faku had asked earlier about timeframes for appointments, we are prioritizing very critical appointments, and we believe that by the end of quarter two, we would have done a few, but we are also quite careful because on the basis of the business case that we put on the table, we know that we will need differently skilled people, and we will also need people to be, not just to add, you know, warm bodies into the system. So we are quite circumspect about how it is that we onboard skills into the company. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the question asked by Honorable Mackenzie, where he wanted to understand what attracted me to this position. For me, the one word response would be patriotism. And also, it's just an opportunity to serve my country. That's why I decided to take this position. I was well aware of the problems besetting the post office. But on the business side of things, much as there's lots of problems within the post office, I see a lot more opportunities for us to turn things around. And incidentally, these opportunities that we see are the very same ones that are seen by the private sector. And therefore, I already weighed my options. I do know that I kind of flew into the eye of the storm, but at least my eyes were wide open. In terms of going back to basics, I really want to agree with you, Mr. Mackenzie, Honorable Mackenzie. This is exactly what we're saying, just deliver. That's what we are busy talking to the people about. We also understand that support does not exist in and of itself. It exists to serve this nation. It exists for the customer. And that's why we are very obsessed with customer service. There are some quick wins that we've won. There are people who are beginning to be happy with our service, but I mean, it's going to be a long way because it also talks to culture. It talks to all sorts of other things that we all understand that beset an organization that has gone as far down as it has. But I must hasten to add that the rot and the demise of SAPO, or should I call it the decline, did not happen overnight. It has been a long time coming, and it's going to take us a whole lot longer time to turn things around. The matter of the 0 to 1 kilogram parcels in terms of distribution is before the courts. And I think it would be very inappropriate of us to ventilate such matters here while the courts are busy. So respectfully, I'd like not to respond to the detail of that question. And as a last comment, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just say this. In any business scenario, it would be an anomaly for a group or even a company to create value in a subsidiary. But then when the separation happens, there's no compensation. And sometimes that's what we'd like to leave as a point to think about as this committee, and that would be the SAPO responses. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, SAPO. Maybe I just want to check if the minister would still want to come back. Honorable Mackenzie, I want to propose probably how we need to go forward, looking at the time for those questions that may have not been adequately responded to if members feel that way. But I do see your hand, maybe before I give to the minister, just to check whether it's a matter you wanted to raise now, or it's an earlier one.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are just a couple of questions which haven't been answered, and then one I need to interrogate directly. So perhaps before we conclude or wrap up, would you give me a second bite, Chair? I won't be long. I'll be 3 minutes.
I just want to check, as I say, if the minister would want to close any gap on the questions asked, but if she's satisfied, I'll just check how many members would want to follow up. How many members would want to follow up? And maybe we can agree on how we would need to take matters forward. I understand your request, Honorable Mackenzie. But if I may just check this, that we can make a ruling on how we need to move forward. Honorable Minister, just wanted to check if you would want to come in at this point, or you're satisfied with what you've already communicated to the committee.
Thanks, Chair. As I said, from my side, in terms of the strategic issues that we raised, I'm satisfied. And of course, at the operational level, as they are presenting based on the work they do, I am satisfied. Thank you so much.
Okay. I see your hand, Honorable Kubeka, too. I'm not sure if you also wanted to raise the same matter Honorable McKenzie would have raised of trying to follow up. Honorable Kubeka, or is it an earlier hand?
Yes, Chair, I was trying to make a follow-up, but I can hear that as you are saying the time. So I just suggest to say maybe to those questions that maybe I want to make a follow-up, can maybe those entity who's relevant for the question, maybe if you can respond, maybe in black and white, Chair. Thanks.
Yeah. Honorable Mackenzie and Honorable Kubeka, I just wanted to test if members, you would agree to this. I think partly Honorable Kubeka is speaking to it. That indeed there may be questions that would have not been responded to adequately as members would want, whether you talk must carry regulations, whether you talk sporting rights, whether you talk about the assets and the point that relates to giving comfort on whether the law is being followed, just to assist us to respond properly in public, as well as the point raised on SAPO, be it on its annual report and so on. And there will be probably difference of opinion on that. That it may help Honorable Mackenzie, and it's what I want to suggest, that it may help to give yourselves an opportunity just to state it in writing on the questions that would have not been answered, and that would demand the response on those questions in writing. And if not satisfied, I think the committee still reserves the right to convene the entities concerned to further interrogate. I'm just also looking at the point that would have set up the session until 9 o'clock as per the slot that we have been given. I also want to ensure that our engagements still remain qualitative, understanding that you've been engaging throughout. I must also be sympathetic to yourselves in that regard. So this is the suggestion, Honorable McKenzie, in that once you've asked those questions, they have to be responded to. And if dissatisfied, we may have to follow up again when we could reduce them to writing and get written responses, which we can make public as the committee, because South Africans would want to know the responses to such questions as we were to make follow-ups. So this is what I would want to suggest to both of you, Honorable McKenzie and Honorable Kubega. Not sure if I'm meeting your requirements given the time. Honorable McKenzie, your hand is still up. Yep.
It says, thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, Chair, we've been waiting for the South African Post Office to appear before this committee for a year and a half, maybe longer. Now that they're here, if we're prepared to sit for MDDA interviews until 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm sure the South African Post Office can provide a little bit of clarity to one or two questions that I asked that they didn't answer. So that's what I'm looking for. So as I understand you, Chairperson, you're going to allow me to pose my questions, and then they will answer them in writing. Is that correct? Because there's one question that I need to pose that I need an answer now. It's a matter of substantial fact. But certainly the others, I'm happy to work that way. Is that how you want to do it, Chairperson?
As I said, I don't want to use the point that I'm making a ruling. That's why I started by suggesting that there are a number of questions that may need to be responded to, and that as a committee, we may want to get those also in writing and come back to engage them. And I'm sure the entities would commit to coming before the committee with an understanding that it would be a continuation of the engagement based on presentations they've already made to the committee. And that's what members are trying to interrogate, but respecting the fact that we may have to look at the quality of the engagements going forward, looking at the time. So I'm just saying there may be a number of members who would say, I have not been adequately answered in this regard. So that's really the proposal, Honorable McKenzie, that you may ask those questions. They may not be responded to satisfaction like in the first one, and then had to make follow-ups again. So I'm just humbly requesting, as I say, I don't want to say I'm ruling, because that's not how we have conducted our business. We try and ensure that there's enough space for engagement. I'm not sure if Honorable McKenzie are persuaded on that. And I'm sure the minister could also commit that at least they get back on the specific matter already presented before us. Honorable Kubega, you'll be last because I have asked both of you now. I'm seeing Honorable Van Dam interjecting in between. So I'm not sure what she wants to raise. But Honorable Kubega, I note you so that you come as last. And then I will have to make a ruling.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair. I would just like to speak in support of Honourable Mackenzie. This is not the first time it's happened to him regarding SAPO. As we all know, it's an issue he's very passionate about. And I think everyone was moved in the manner in which he addressed this issue. It's clearly one that he cares very deeply about. And he gets a lot of correspondence from the public about SAPO. But at every meeting, his questions aren't answered. And then there's a request that he must just wait for the opportunity for written questions. I think the system in which Parliament is set up is that we can submit written questions, which is that one process. And then there's committee where we're allowed to engage in thorough debates and have all our questions answered. And I would request that Honourable Mackenzie please be provided with the opportunity, because he said very clearly that there's one question he would really like answered. But I think generally, to be fair, SAPO doesn't come around these parts much, and Honourable Mackenzie does not get to the answers to the questions from all our constituents who write to him about the post office, because they know Postman Cam is the guy dealing with matters of the post office. So could he please, Chairperson, be indulged? I think it's fair, given the unfairness in the past. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, Honourable Kubeka, as I said, I would want to hold on the matter. But Honourable Mackenzie, your hand is still up. As I said, I was still persuading you. I don't want to get persuaded. Honourable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me try to explain to say, indeed, all of us as a concern, and I hope that on the side of SAPO to us, all of us, especially because it cater for all different kinds of people. So indeed, all of us, we are taking SAPO as a silver cup on our side. No one is against with those questions that Honorable Mackenzie is going to ask, but I was saying, because mine it was going to on the side of SAPC. It was just a proposal, seeing that at the time, now if I can check, I'm sure it's 10 o'clock at the moment. So it was not on the issue of saying maybe we don't want Honorable Mackenzie to ask the question. That is why I was making that proposal to say, can we have that chance maybe to follow up with those written questions, Chair?
Thanks, Honorable Kubeka. Honorable Mackenzie, you seem to be...
Thank you, Chairperson. I asked very specific questions. The security at the branches, what was that? How many branches? Who supplied the fiber network? I think that was answered for me. Intention to acquire funding, what funding? I'm still completely unclear as to how this, I was looking for a warm feeling, a fuzzy feeling as to how the SAPO was going to be financially sustainable. The only thing that was put on the table was compensation for the post bank. And if I look at the balance sheet, I think we're looking about $3.5 billion, which barely covers 2 years loss making. So I want to know how this loss making insolvent post office and its board of directors are going to justify running an insolvent company with no funding. So that was that question. But I'm happy to leave it there. Chairperson, the one that really concerns me, the one I really need an answer from is the one Ms. Ntsikeni gave me when I asked how many post offices...
So in essence, Honourable Mackenzie, you are proceeding to ask the question.
The one question that was... I'm going to leave all the other questions. It's fine. I'll put them in as written questions. But the one question Ms. Ntsikeni answered, I asked her how many post offices had been closed for non-payment of rent. She said 11, and the amount outstanding was 4 million rand. 6 weeks ago, I got an aged analysis from the post office in response to a written question that shows the post office owes 129 million rand for post office rent going back, it's over 120 days. The total was 120 million. 120 days plus is 51 million. So, you know, and 800 post offices. So either Ms. Ntsikeni's information is wrong, or she's lying to Parliament, and I would hate to think it would be the latter. So I just need some clarity on that, Chairperson. What does she mean when she says 11 post offices and 4 million rand owed? Because I'm in possession of information supplied by the department that tells me something completely different. And I was looking for an update in that and an improvement in that figure. So if she can confirm that figure of 11 and 4 million rand is accurate, that's all I need. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your indulgence, colleagues, as well.
I'm not sure whether McKinsey was working on me.
No, sir.
Muted. I hope you're not trying your luck this late in the evening. As I said, Honorable McKinsey, you've put this point. I would not insist on them answering unless they want to clarify this thing about a written response received, differing from the response that's given now, or an update of some sort. As I said, they are free to respond to that if they think it's they have got the facts to give to the contract now to clear the public perception that indicated on the response received. Otherwise, I wanted to, as I said, Sapo, you can indicate if that point you wanted to clarify or not, given that you've already responded in writing and this contradiction. I think that's the only reason I've listened to it, because then it affects the relation we're trying to make of reducing to writing and getting written responses. I'm not sure if you want to respond to that. But I think going forward, we may just ask for indulgence, Minister and entities, that we may want to come back once we've received answers in writing and make proposals to come back just to complete the discussion. In the interests of South Africans, that we do that, and that matters could be cleared, but also empower members to be able to respond when these questions that would have asked and not responded to, that we can be able to respond to constituencies that we represent. So that may be a discussion we'd want to have with yourselves outside of what we could deal with this morning. So I'm just checking there. I saw a hand from Sapo. I saw a hand.
Ms. Ntsikeni, the COO will respond, Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. At the time we received the question from Honorable McKenzie, we gave him feedback as it was at the time. And we indicated in the response that the thing is, the figures and the closures vary every day. So at that time, we gave a total figure and it was a cumulative figure. His question today was how many offices are closed tonight, today, due to rental. And the feedback I gave him is the feedback I got from my team, saying it's 16 offices. And the question was how many now and what's the outstanding amount? So the outstanding amount is the 16. It's for the 16 that are currently closed now. So it's not a cumulative figure. It's what we need to pay to open now. I thought maybe let me
extend that. And tomorrow it could change because another landlord could close, one or two, or we don't know. And an invoice could come through, but the figures I've given is what I've been given as well as of tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, I think Honorable McKenzie, that matter is now clarified, that the figures will change and be updated from time to time. And as I said, I was only pending because you've received an answer to a written question, and we have asked that members must write and they will receive in black and white. If there's contradiction in figures and we can't explain, it may question credibility of the information received. But I think SAPO has now clarified that the figures would change depending on what happens on a particular day. But it doesn't write off the point that members could still send the questions so that they are coordinated through the committee support. And from those questions, make a determination on whether there's satisfaction in the responses, and that we can look at convening again to look at those responses. Can we attend the meeting at that point, honorable members? I'm not giving a new hand now. I take it that the hands that are up on my side are those that were raised earlier on. Not that you want to reopen a discussion. The meeting, therefore, is officially.
Yes, Chair.
Are you raising it again?
Oh.
No, it's just that there's a mic that's open and there's. Okay, so that's it. Yes.
I was saying good night.
Okay, thank you. Then the meeting is official again. No, we thank do you. Want to go. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Chair.
Good night, colleagues.
Good evening.
Good evening, everybody.
I'm going to dream about these unanswered questions. They're going to resonate in my mind the whole night. Good night, Chair.
No, for H, Honorable McKenzie, it would really keep you busy. To keep on.
Hey, you are so charming. You can just pull the sting from my tail with one smile. Good night, sir. I wish you a good night.